All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Today we have an urgent bonus episode regarding the JFK records. We're a bit early for season 3, which starts on March 5th, but given the importance of these new developments, we really could not wait any longer to cover it. We're fortunate today to have my friend and co-author of the JFK Assassination Chokeholds, Andrew Eiler, on the show. Andrew is the leading expert on the ins and outs of the JFK Records Act. He's been on Solving JFK before to explain the status of the records and to highlight how the National Archives has not been following the existing law when it comes to the JFK records. We have a lot of new information to cover in this episode, including some breaking news. We'll talk about where we are with Trump's executive order to declassify the files, the new congressional committee, the 2,400 new JFK assassination records just discovered by the FBI, and most importantly, the massive revelation that Andrew Eiler and some other fellow researchers discovered when they recently visited the National Archives. Long story short, Andrew found a box and a half of ARRB final determination notifications at the archives. These documents ordered specific, currently classified JFK files to be declassified long ago. But because of the way that the National Archives is storing slash hiding, some would say, these documents, Andrew currently only has the tip of the iceberg. We'll unpack this breaking news and more with Andrew Eiler next on Solving JFK.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Hey, Andrew. Welcome back to Solving JFK.
Good evening, Matt. Good to see you.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you coming on. And I'm really excited just, you know, for you to be able to tell all of the listeners the things that we've been talking about. I mean, kind of an exciting time in the world of JFK assassination research.
It's been a busy and crazy 2 weeks, well, maybe even 3 weeks, as we've seen a lot of stuff happen.
It seems like, you know, 10 years of news has happened when it comes to JFK records disclosures since I stopped putting out episodes last season. So we have this brand new congressional committee, 2,400 new FBI documents that suddenly show up out of nowhere, an order from the new president, who's known for his adversarial relationship with intelligence agencies, and this order is seemingly to declassify more records. And then we have this massive discovery that you made at the National Archives. So let's go ahead and jump into it. We have a lot to cover. The executive order was signed on January 23rd by Trump, and it, quote, directs the director of national intelligence and other appropriate officials to present a plan within 15 days for the full and complete release of all John F. Kennedy assassination records. According to the AP, the Office of DNI did provide a plan to the president by the deadline, but there's been no information at all about what that plan is or what the next steps are. So, yeah, Andrew, what are your thoughts on that? Where do you see this going?
Yeah, you know what? The news from January 23rd was pretty sensational when it hit the front pages. But again, like you said, it's a plan to have a new plan. And the fact is, we've had a very solid plan and process put in place since the 1990s under the JFK Records Act. And so anything short of an executive order that just completely releases the records, I think, is disappointing in reality. I do like this plan better than the Biden and CIA transparency plans that were put out in 2023 and 2021. Those plans did a lot of damage to the entire process that was set out in the JFK Records Act. No one's yet to see what the actual new plan is under the Trump executive order, but I think what we'll see is things slowly trickle out, and information about that plan probably will be made public in the next few weeks, I hope. But really, it's another plan that's laid on top of multiple previous plans. And the fact is, the JFK Records Act is the definitive legal, legislatively based plan with a process to release all those records. So that's where we stand.
AKA, we already have a good law, we're just not using it.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, just a couple of things that jumped out at me on this. The first thing that jumped out at me when I heard that, Trump wanted the Director of National Intelligence to issue a plan, I go, "You mean Tulsi Gabbard? She's not confirmed." And indeed, she wasn't sworn in until February 12th. The report was due and was, according to the AP, turned over on February 7th. So that makes me wonder, who is the decider at the Director of National Intelligence that's proposing the plan? Is that person aligned with Tulsi Gabbard? Because regardless of what you think about Tulsi Gabbard's politics, she is interested in this case, and we know that because there's a picture of her walking around with James Douglas's JFK and the Unspeakable. So, do you have any thoughts about that? I know you're a Canadian, so I guess knowledge on the American government stops at the border, but that's not true because you're the literal expert on the JFK Records Act. But go ahead.
I've got a bit of a conspiracy theory on this one,
Hey.
Matt, and I'm not one to really dig into conspiracies. I mean, my main focus has been the law, as you know. But I don't think it mattered that Tulsi Gabbard was not in her role as Director of National Intelligence. I think really. The JFK records that are being withheld are probably a bargaining chip. They're a piece of leverage that maybe the president has over the intelligence agencies, particularly the CIA. So I wouldn't really be surprised if President Trump essentially, in his executive order, said, "Hey, I'm giving you 15 days, CIA and intelligence community. 15 days to come back and make me an offer that I can't refuse with respect to what you're going to do for me." And so, out of that, I wouldn't be surprised if a large number of the most controversial files that are still being withheld stay secret after this plan is laid out for the public. Because, again, I see these assassination records as being a bit of a leveraged bargaining chip that the president can use.
What do you think he would, what kind of quid pro quo do you think that he would want from the CIA?
I don't know. What do you think the CIA could do for him? I mean, clearly they have media assets. They could call off the dogs in the media. For a while anyway. I do honestly think that President Trump wants to be the president to release the JFK records, though. That being said, I think he wants to go down in the history books as a guy who finally let it all out. Because I think that would give him a place in history. that so far, how many presidents has it been since, I mean, we're what, 11 presidents since JFK? And they've all kind of kicked the can down the road and punted on the JFK record. So I do think Trump has an honest to goodness desire to be that one president to let it all hang out.
My initial thought too, when I saw this news came out, everybody was saying that he had already ordered the full declassification and that everything was declassified. People are calling me, "What did you find? What did you find?" I'm like, "It's he ordered a plan, right?" So, now, so I have given him, I think some people think I've been unfair to Trump, in terms of, basically being very skeptical that anything's actually going to happen. But it is true that he's the only major party candidate in the race who took the position that he would disclose the files. So that's something. Order does call for the full and complete release. So we'll just kind of have to see. It's the questions, what's going to actually happen? Or, is this some sort of limited hangout, kind of like you were saying? Or is this something where we're really gonna let everything out? So we'll see. Finally, just one thing that this whole conversation has underlined for me, which is related to our conversation today, is we're only talking about files that the ARRB had. So, there's the 2400 FBI files we're gonna talk about here in just a second. There's the whistleblower that came forward to Jefferson Morley saying there's this facility in Virginia where the CIA's got, basically like a cassette of some sort of audio recording of Oswald in Mexico City. So, there's the point is, just because it's not, in the records that end up being declassified doesn't mean that it never existed. And that's pretty undeniable at this point, especially given these FBI records at the last second.
Yeah, I think who's going to be surprised when more and more documents start to come out? I think these FBI records will be very interesting to see what's in them, whether they're the most sensitive records or they were really just peripheral. Who knows, really? I think the way that the records have been handled in general has been pretty poor. I don't think all the agencies complied with the JFK Records Act and turned over all of their assassination related records. I think there's probably thousands more records sitting around various agencies. Not all the agencies even signed off a declaration of full disclosure at the ARB's request at the end of the ARB's term. So, I mean, there's probably a lot more out there that that can be turned in.
Sure. Let's go ahead and jump into the 2400 FBI files. So I'll just quickly read this excerpt of a CNN article and then see what you think. The FBI said in a statement Monday that it performed a new search of records following Trump's January 23rd executive order, which directed the release of more documents related to the assassinations of JFK, RFK, and MLK. The search resulted in approximately 2,400 newly inventoried and digitized records that were previously unrecognized as related to the JFK assassination case file, the Bureau said in a statement. Since 2020, the FBI began collecting closed case paper files from FBI field offices across the country to be housed in its Central Records Complex in Virginia. The FBI said it can now more quickly comb through and find records as a result of the more comprehensive inventory and technological advances in automating its record-keeping processes. The FBI said that it's working to turn the documents over to the National Archives to be included in the ongoing declassification process. Now, my analysis of this, and I'd love to hear your opinion. Trump's order did not tell the FBI to do anything. So, for this statement to make sense, it would have to mean that they're in the process of scanning the files in. And while they're going about scanning these files in, it happened to be after Trump gave his order that they then discover them, because they're not doing anything related to the order, because the order is just for the, DNI to make a plan. So, how do you read that?
Yeah, I actually think the first part of President Trump's executive order does urge and command the agencies to do a renewed search. The second part of the plan of the executive order does focus on having a plan to release the files. But I do, if you take a look at the first part, maybe you can pop it up for your audience. I do think it says that the agencies should take a renewed look at what they may have. And so, really what I think with the FBI, what I would like to see is clearly there were some records, communications between J. Edgar Hoover and I believe it was the CIA regarding the Mexico tapes. And I know you and I have had some conversations in the past about the audio tape that came out of Mexico City, allegedly of Oswald. And I would bet that there are some FBI records that kind of confirm that J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI did actually have a copy of that audio tape at some point, which led to Hoover saying to President Johnson, yeah, that wasn't Oswald at the consulate. So I would imagine those are some of the records that maybe the FBI is has had withheld. There's about 14,000 pages of records that were ready back in the 1990s to turn over to the Assassination Records Review Board, but they were not turned over. And so they were kept by the FBI. They were known by the FBI and kept by the FBI and not turned over to the ARP. So that's a real problem. I mean, someone's responsible for that, right?
That's a sounds like obstruction of justice. This
Sounds like something.
does this rise to the level that it would need to be included in an update in the second version of Chokeholds?
Yeah, I think let's find out what happened. I mean, if Congress is going to truly investigate, they should be digging into exactly why these known assassination records were put aside and not turned over to the ARB, despite a law that said they had to turn them over. I mean, this is really problematic. Yeah. Version two or what is second edition?
Second edition. Second edition. That's it. 2.0. All right. Let's go on to the next topic. Task Force on Declassification of Federal Secrets.
For too long, the American spirit has been dimmed by a veil of secrecy, by a government that has grown too comfortable in the shadows, denying us the transparency we deserve. But today, we stand at the dawn of a new era where the light of truth begins to shine through. A few weeks ago, President Donald Trump made a historic announcement. With the stroke of a pen, he committed to declassifying the files concerning the assassinations of President John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a decision not just monumental, but pivotal. It is with profound honor that I have been entrusted by Speaker Mike Johnson and Chairman James Comer to lead the House Oversight Task Force on Declassification of Federal Secrets. Together with the help of the White House, our intelligence allies, the Department of Defense, the Department of Justice, we will be conducting investigations into the following: the assassinations of JFK, RFK, and Dr. Martin Luther King, unidentified aerial phenomena, also known as UAPs, unidentified submerged objects, also known as USOs, the Epstein client list, the origins of COVID-19, and the 9/11 files.
There was this press conference that Representative Luna gave there with Representative Comer. And, it was, well, I've got a few different thoughts on it. And I guess I'm trying to reserve judgment until we kind of find out exactly what happens. But I was excited to see that she mentioned, not by name, but she referenced the idea of the Seibert O'Neill report, the idea that, hey, there's these two FBI agents at the autopsy. I saw her talk about that. And I'm going, she's talking about Seibert and O'Neill. This lady, she, this. This is a congresswoman, and she knows about Seibert and O'Neill. That's exciting. And then the other thing is, she says that she believes that there's two shooters, which obviously we know kind of what side of the line she would fall on in that case. I'm sure that drives the people who think Oswald did it alone crazy that presumption is being made. But the point is we got to get these documents. There's got to be some reason they're holding them, or otherwise they're just sat. Like, if you're thinking logically, whoever's in charge, actually, you want people to trust you, and you're not having, you don't have anything really to hide. Why would you not just turn it over or destroy it? That's my thing. Just destroy it. You've destroyed everything else. No one cared. Like, it's gaslighting to me to pretend that you're going to comply. Just burn the records and let's move on and tell us that there's nothing there. You administrative error. That would be closure for me. But anyway, short of burning the records, I'd love to get them if they would decide to not burn them and give them to us. The concern I have about this task force is that it seems a little broad. So we're covering JFK, RFK, MLK, 9/11, Epstein, and basically UFOs, the new hip names for UFOs. Why not throw in Las Vegas shooting, the Oklahoma City bombing, and everybody's favorite, Mothman. Where is Mothman in the mix? And just to be clear, I'm not saying Las Vegas shooting or the Oklahoma City bombing are nonsensical. I'm saying, how do you draw the line? I guess. But I just worry with a limited amount of time and a limited amount of focus, how much can really get done? And that's why I would hope that this congressional committee, at a bare minimum, would help you get the ball over the line and getting these files that have already been ordered to be declassified to actually be declassified. But anything that comes out of this, that helps us move the case forward is favorable. It's better than nothing happened at all. Your thoughts on the task force, Andrew?
Yeah, it's a lot to chew, right? You've laid it all out there. All of these different long-time cases, throwing in UAP, UFOs, 9/11. I don't know how they're planning on dealing with each of these subjects. And so the lack of focus is a bit of a concern. All we have really is hope that that they'll be serious about the job and that serious people are in the lead and are going to take the lead in this, because I don't think it gets any more serious than the assassination of a president, whether it's today or whether it's 60 years ago. So if this turns into a circus, I think it will do a disservice to the people of America, and I do feel very strongly about that. There are some really critical things that this task force really needs to look at. I hope that they stay focused on the serious issues and don't devolve into these age-old confusing contortions that we've seen come out of the research community. So I hope they do their job. I have hope, but I also have deep concerns.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Right. Okay, that's fair. All right, let's get to the breaking news, the big story, which is a major discovery at the National Archives. And what's great about this is it's not just a major discovery by anybody. It's a major discovery by the exact person that you would want to discover it. You, Andrew, you went there looking for it. You had a theory of what would be there. You put your work in. So I don't want to give the whole thing away, but I guess let's start out with just zooming out. The big picture of the ARRB, super duper high level. What's the point? What did it do? The idea of periodic review, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the law was passed, the JFK Records Act, in 1992. It mandated the Assassination Records Review Board into existence, and it was in operation from 94 to 98. It had one job, It was, well, multiple jobs, but one big job to collect, review, and release all of the records related to the assassination of President Kennedy. And over the course of its 4 years of existence, they collected millions and millions of pages of records. They reviewed each record, and in accordance with the law, they had to issue what lawyers know as an agency final order, disposing of each record and even each postponement or redaction within a record. So there's a little law or legal order for each withheld bit of information and each withheld record. And they were very specific with these legal orders. They ordered periodic review for some of them where the information was deemed to be sensitive and requiring further review to make sure that the criteria were still being met for postponement. And in many cases, they ordered the records released in full immediately. And then in a number of further instances, they ordered the records released at a future date. And these were specific future dates. And I can talk a little bit more about the actual orders that I found. But the fact is, these orders haven't found their way into the public, despite the fact that the Assassination Records Review Board created them in order to be public facing, so that these orders were part of the ARB's work to create an enforceable and accountable process to release all the
Right.
records.
So ultimately, the ARB was around from what, 1994 to 1998, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And what we're talking about here are orders that were made during the time the ARB existed. And they were saying, hey, we can't release this right now, but this is scheduled to be released at this date into the future, which is a date that we're not going to exist anymore, right?
Yes.
And so there are several of these orders that you found. We'll get in. I can't wait to unpack the story. But there are, you found a material number of these orders that have ordered the declassification of specific redactions, ordered the declassification of specific documents. And for whatever reason, those declassifications didn't happen. And one big reason is because it's been buried for all these years, and now you're just putting some sunlight on it, which is the best disinfectant, friends. So that's why, because there are ways to keep these documents classified. It's not just like the ARB said, put everything out, right? There are legitimate ways that the government could argue that the documents stay classified, right?
Two enti three entities could release records. The originating agency could say, okay, these aren't classified anymore, release them. The second entity was the Assassination Records Review Board that had the authority under the law to postpone or release records. And the third is the president, well, and the Congress. President and Congress, who had control over their own records. And the president over the executive branch records could also release or postpone these records. So, yeah, what happened though is that the ARB did in fact issue hundreds of orders released that I found anyway. It's probably more like thousands of orders because I could only get my hands on 450 of these final agency orders. And I do believe that there's probably over 30,000 in total. So I've been able to get 450 out of 30,000 plus orders that were issued.
Out of the 450 you were able to get, have you, so you guys have done some work cross-referencing the orders that you have, and what things should have been released already versus what we actually have in the public record. I know that's quite a gargantuan task.
Yeah, listen, this is a little bit confusing, right, for your audience probably. Yes, we a small team have been going through. We're not finished it yet because it is a gargantuan task, cross-referencing each of these orders with the actual records to see how they've been handled and disposed of. But what we found, for a very, very large number, in the hundreds, is that the ARRB issued orders to release hundreds of these records in January of 2006. And for a very large number, of these orders, the records remained withheld until after 2018 to 2023. Now we have in this group found four records that, despite being ordered released in January 2001, they appear to remain withheld under the CIA transparency plans.
So, okay, that's great. So you were able to show that about a little less than half of the records that you looked at, they actually did not release them when they were supposed to in 2006, but they did finally at some point release them either in 2018 or 2023. But for four of the 450, so about what's that?
There could be more,
1%.
Matt.
Okay.
There could be more. Yeah, we
Okay.
haven't finished the full analysis, but I've found four records that were ordered released in 2006 that
Right.
appear to remain withheld under the CIA transparency plans.
Right, but we can extrapolate. There's 30,000 of these, and there's five. Let's say there's only four. Let's say it's 1%. So what's 1% of 30,000? That's 300 documents.
And I can
That's
say,
material.
here's the thing. The records that I was able to pull, these ARRB final determinations, were only for the year 1996. So I've not seen any final determinations from the ARB for the years 1997 or 1998, which I believe those are the years that they issued the most determinations as they were finishing up their work.
Let's get into your actual trip to the National Archives and your theory of it. Because here's what's cool about this. It's one thing to go to the National Archives and say, I want to go see the magic bullet. I want to go see the gun. And I went there and I touched some documents and look at me. I'm LARPing as a researcher. I could be a research LARPer, candidly. I think I could pull it off. But what Andrew actually did was went looking for these documents. That is it true that no one had found, like they it's not like they were out there before. You just suspected that they must exist. Is that right? The final determination
Yeah,
forms?
you know what? In the Act, they don't call these records final determination notifications. They don't call them agency final orders. Two sections of the Act refer to them. I mean, the main section that is 9C3B of the JFK Records Act says the ARRB had to create a report, and the report for each record or each postponement had to provide certain information, the Section 6 criteria for postponement, and a date on which the record should be periodically reviewed under other sections of the Act or released. And so, knowing that the law required the ARRB to create these reports, I went looking for those reports, because they had to be organized in some fashion. And what I found was an internal ARRB memo from 1997, I believe, June 1997, or maybe it was June 1996, where the ARB staff were tasked to, it was called the ARRB Final Determination Project. And what the staff was tasked to do was to take these final determination notifications and append them to each record before the ARB shipped the records off to the archives to be cataloged and stored. So that was the first inkling that I had, and that was about 2 years ago that these final determination records existed. And so then I went about finding them, and there's a few of them out there in the like on Black Vault or on Mary Farrell. You can see one pop up once in a while, but they're not cataloged. They're not really digitized. They're not indexed at the National Archives. You can't really search for them because they're not assassination records. They're internal ARRB files or internal ARRB documents, let's say. And so you just can't search for them. And when I was arranging my trip to the National Archives, I made it clear I wanted every single copy of an ARRB final determination notification. And I said, particularly for records postponed after 2017, and even more particularly for records that are still being withheld in the protected collection. I really drilled down, made it clear what I wanted. I was flat out denied access to the records or ARRB final determinations for records in the protected collection or ones that are still withheld. They just said, no, you can't have those. And I will say, I've communicated with senior ARRB people. I don't want to name them on air, but they are senior people. And they've confirmed that they created these ARRB final notifications or final determinations to be public facing. There's no reason why they should be withheld. They were all transferred to NARA as they processed them at the ARB, and they were all meant to be public facing as part of their accountability process.
So you basically just, you made an appointment, you asked for the protected files, they said no, and then you said, all right, well, let me see what you got for the other ones. And then what happened that led to you discovering the final determination notifications? I guess I'm looking for the binder clip story.
Yeah, you know what? Listen, I do have to say that the people at National Archives are very professional, and they're helpful to a certain extent. So I did an advance request for all of these documents. When I got there, they wheeled out a cart with about 16 boxes, gray boxes. I sent you a photo. Maybe you can post one up to show what a NARA box looks like. And so as I was going through from the top and down, I went through about 12 boxes, and not one of the first 12 boxes had any copies of any final determination notifications. And I was pretty depressed because I traveled all the way from Ontario down to College Park, Maryland, for 3 days to make copies of these records, and I couldn't find any. I did get to the 13th box, and I opened it up, and the box, as your viewers will see from the photos, the box was labeled press and public contacts. And when I opened it up, I had no hope that anything of value was going to be in that box. But lo and behold, there was a very thick stack of ARRB final determination notifications. There was only a half other box full of these documents. And so in total, I got a box and a half. There really should have been about 16 boxes just of these final determination notifications, because there's over 30,000 of them. And, you know, I don't want to make more of this clip story than is possible, but the stack was pretty thick that I got. And it was held together by this binder clip. And when I went to unclip it, I got reprimanded pretty severely by the proctor or monitor at National Archives, who came very quickly up behind me and scolded me for removing this clip. And so some people have found humor in this story. So I asked her, well, what am I supposed to do? And she said, you're supposed to go down to the end of the archive room and have an archivist unclip my stack of papers, and then they would put the stack of papers in a new folder, which will become an internal folder instead of a clip. So when I went to put the documents back in the box in the right order, they would now be unclipped, but in a folder. And so I thought to myself, well, how long has that been the policy at archives that researchers aren't allowed to take out a little springy clip from the record? So I went and I asked one of the senior archivists on the floor, and they said that's always been the policy here. You don't take clips off, and an archivist does, and then they get reinserted in a file folder. So, I mean, I thought to myself, well, I wonder what that means, because if you don't put a clip back on, it suggests that these records hadn't been sorted through by any researchers on a previous visit to NARA, and that these are probably, and a lot of the pages were actually stuck together. So a lot of them had water damage on them, so when you go to open the files, they kind of like pop. Do you know what I'm saying? With old paper. And so if these, no one had seen these records in 30 years, I find that kind of telling as well. These files really have been buried. You can't search them. They're not digitized. They're not online anywhere. They're in a box titled or labeled Press and Public Contacts, and they weren't complied with, from what I can see at all, by the archives or the National Archivist, who had a duty to follow the orders laid out in these ARB final notifications.
So if somebody goes to the National Archives and they find something with a binder clip, they kind of know that the binder clip is like, in a way, like staking your flag. You're in the document. Like, you did it. You're the first one there. You've unclipped the binder clip, man. So
Yeah,
congrats.
well, listen, they said it's not incomprehensible that a previous researcher broke the policies and unclipped the documents and then put the clip back on. I may have just been the first one to get caught, but chances are that most researchers follow the rules, and so there's a high likelihood that those documents had not been viewed before.
Wow. Well, that was a pretty big story. When you first started telling me the thing about the binder clip and you were asking, well, how long's that been the policy? I thought you were just telling me how you were a jerk to them. You're like, so then I was like, well, the last time I was here, that's not what you guys were doing. But then I realized why you were asking it, because you're a nice person. You're from Canada after all. But anyway, yeah, I think whether or not it's absolutely true that the binder clip means no one's seen it, I think we need to get you some sort of a binder clip trophy type scenario. And you had some folks with you too, right?
Yeah, you know what? One of the best parts of the trip was meeting up with your friend Jeff Crudell over at JFK, The Enduring Secret, and our co-author Paul Blow. And you know, it was good in many ways. They both were huge help doing the research, but they were also witnesses. To see what went down with the exchanges between the archive staff and myself as I was trying to obtain the other 30,000 records. So I'm glad I wasn't there by myself, because it was good to have people watching the interactions and seeing how things went down there. Because when I did ask a senior archivist on the JFK records where the rest of the final determinations are, and he could not show them or produce them, and I only got access to that box and a half of final determinations. But I will say this, Matt. There's always ways to be tenacious and I have found alternate routes to get my hands on even more of these final determination notifications. Because I read a subsequent part of the act, I believe it's 9F3G. And the act is just so wonderful. There's like little...
One of my favorite sections is really...
There's little crevices in the act. And every single year that the ARB was in existence, they had to file an annual report. And in their annual report, they had to include all copies of all final determinations that they issued for that year. Mm-hmm. And so I looked it up, and sure enough, I could find two reports for 95 and 96. And I called the Library of Congress because the ARB was mandated to send copies to both the House, the Senate, the President, and the National Archives, and Library of Congress did not have a copy of this, of any of the reports, but a very nice librarian at the Library of Congress said, oh, Quinnipiac University in New Haven, Connecticut, has copies of the 95 and 96 annual reports. So I contacted the law library at Quinnipiac, and a very lovely reference librarian provided me with copies of both the 95 and 96 annual reports with more, hundreds and hundreds more final determination notifications or final orders.
Well, so you just need 97 and 98 then.
That's right. Cool. Yeah.
All right, so let me ask you this. What did you, it's a little in the weeds, but I'm curious. So
this is very in the weeds. Yeah, you know, I'm sorry to your audience. I mean, when you look at the fact that really thousands of legal orders to review and release the files seem to have been suppressed and not followed and not complied with, I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Right. The box and a half that you got, what were the search terms that you gave them that yielded that box? And can you back into how you could go about getting the 9798 based on the same thing? Or is that, I'm just curious, like, did they just accidentally give it to you? Did you go, give me everything you got from this slice of time or what?
Yeah, not to add even more confusion, what I was looking for are final determinations. There are also these things called formal determinations, right? And that's what the archives gave me. Like the preponderance of materials that I got were these formal determinations, which are just columns of numbers that don't provide any real useful information. And I do think probably they gave me that box and a half not knowing what was in it because it was completely mislabeled. So I wouldn't
you ask for press. Like, why would they give you a press contacts box? You didn't ask for that.
No, I didn't ask for press and public contacts. Look, they may have given it to me because it's in there. But when I asked the archivist, well, where are the other 30,000? Of these are the ones that I'm looking for, these ones. He did seem a little taken aback, right? But yeah. I don't know.
Probably listen, brought a binder clip to put over your lips.
Listen, Matt, I mean, the fact is, even really experienced members of the research community didn't understand the scope of these records, these ARRB final determination notifications. And when they realized both the legal implications of these records and the number of these records, it's become a bit of a concern, I gotta say.
Yeah. Let me just quickly the high level summary of this. So if you're going to have, you know, hear one thing, I think, and you can add to this or tell me if I got anything wrong. Here's the main thing you need to know. The ARRB had these final determinations, and they should have been made available to the public from the outset. They should have been scanned and put online because these were orders for when the documents are supposed to come out. Instead, they've been hidden, and most remain hidden, although Andrew just told us that he was able to get pretty much half of them from Quinnipiac, so that's pretty awesome. But this has led to documents that were already legally declassified still being classified. And, you know, you can't enforce the JFK Records Act without the orders. And these final determinations, you know, we could say are charitably they were lost, or, you know, administratively, we could say the administration. Yeah, sure. The administration's poor. But in reality, no matter what you want to call it, they've been hidden from the public. The ARRB used a software to make sure that they managed this huge task. It was called Fast Track. Still, those documents are mostly not publicly available. That's a question I have for you, Andrew, about Fast Track. So they had software for it. Did they just stop using it? I mean, is there an explanation for how it just stopped working? Did someone just pull the plug? I don't understand.
The ARRB started up, when you think 1994, computers, the internet, things were really just getting rolling. And they created this proprietary software because the job that they had to undertake reviewing and making decisions, like millions of decisions on these records, they needed something to like diarize, like a tickler system to diarize when actions needed to be taken. And this Fast Track system was really unique. And it was proprietary to the ARB. And they integrated everything very, very quickly in 94 and 95 to make the best use of this software. And I don't know what happened once the ARB wound up. You would think that archives would take the system and use it to do their lawful mandated work of periodic review and releasing these documents consistent with the ARB orders. But I don't know what happened. I can't say one way or another. And I do, like, were these records actively hidden by archives? I can't say that, okay? But what I can say is that they were made very, very, very difficult to find. And even when you request them, they won't produce them in large numbers. And I mean, to the best of my knowledge, no one has copies of the final determinations for 1997 and 1998.
And, you know, it's presumably neither Trump nor Biden were aware of these final determinations. They just did the omnibus, you know, bulk delay of all these documents. So is that true, you think?
Yeah. So I've read a lot of the correspondence between the archivist and President Trump and President Biden. I've certainly read the Gannon memo from 2017 that initiated the first postponement after the deadline to release all the records. And from what I can see, no one advised President Trump or President Biden that the ARRB had made detailed orders, including many orders to release the records in 2001. And other dates prior to 2017. So one has to wonder what either president would have done had they known that there were already existing orders that weren't appealed by the agencies back in the 90s when they should have appealed them. What would either of the presidents done? I don't know even if President Trump realizes to this day that he wasn't given the full picture of these record releases.
Yeah. So bottom line, lots of currently classified documents that have already been ordered declassified. You said a huge, about half of them were supposed to be declassified in 2006. They didn't end up getting declassified until 2018 or 2023. And then another smaller number, but, you know, about 1% of the documents so far are ones that still are classified and have already been ordered to be declassified. Do we think, I guess I want to quickly ask you your thoughts on Trump firing the archivist, and whether or not anyone at the National Archives is even aware of this, and what's your plan to go about making them aware of this?
Yeah, I mean, I've done quite a bit of outreach to leaders in the research community. I've met with a congressman on Capitol Hill to discuss this and other issues of non-compliance with the act. You know, I mean, at the archives, it was pretty clear what I was looking for. And I would be surprised if the senior JFK archivist there isn't abundantly clear what these records are, what they represent, the legal ramifications. I'd be surprised if the archives isn't fully aware of this. I have put in subsequent requests for the 97 and 98 documents. I've not heard back from the archives. I've been bounced around a little bit between archivists that I've reached out to. I hope to hear back. I've also put out questions to senior members of the ARRB about whether they issued reports for 97 and 98. I'm still waiting to hear back from them on this. I'm waiting for comments about what I've discovered from members of the ARRB as well.
All right, so last question. Let's assume we get all the rest of these final determination notifications, and it occurs at about the same rate, about the rate of 1%, 2% of the remaining 30,000 files are still declassified, even though they've been ordered to be, are still classified, even though they've been ordered to be declassified. You know, if that ends up being the case, we're talking 300, 500 documents, would it not just be as simple as filing a lawsuit with a writ of mandamus and going, here's the statutory duty, here's the order, here's the proof that you're not complying, make it go? Like, is it, I don't understand. It seems like a layup to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is definitely a legal hammer that can be applied. Whether it will be successful or not is a different question. Orders were issued, legal orders, they weren't complied with. It seems a little arbitrary and capricious to, they weren't appealed, for them to be later reclassified after they were declassified in the mid 2000s. I think there is a strong case that can be made in the courts, and with mandamus or the Administrative Procedures Act.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's a fundamental, do we have a rule of law or not situation? So let's, it'll be interesting to see where this goes. And just kudos to you, Andrew, on your work, and, you know, Jeff and Paul for everything they've done too. It's just so cool that you had the idea that this would be there. You went to go find it. You found some, and then you were able to go find the other, you know, half of the rest of what you're looking for. And indeed, they've still got some things classified that they're not supposed to have classified. I mean, pretty cool, man. Good stuff.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Matt, the crazy thing is that back in 2022, in the spring of 2022, I had this really all formulated out, and although I didn't have the real details of the final determinations from the ARB in my hand, the theory was so strong that I'd fleshed it out in writing, and along with the ministerial duties of the archivist to comply with these final determinations. And so this has been, what, like a 2.5 year process to end up getting, you know, well, now maybe even thousands of these records in my hands. And I mean, one of them that I took a look at was the ARB final determination for the Lopez report. Wow. And there were like over, I think, 260 postponements in the Lopez report alone. It's pretty wild when
Can't
you
imagine
actually,
why.
when you make the connection to how the ARB disposed of each of these records, and then to see how they've actually been handled, it's eye-opening.
Wow, yeah. We'll have to have you back on again, and next time we can either you can either break down how Trump has done a wonderful job and in declassifying everything, and the Congressional Committee was able to successfully, follow the JFK Records Act, or you can come on and tell us about the new lawsuit that you're going to be involved with. So we look forward to it either way.
Matt, it's been great talking to you. Thanks so much for getting this out there.
All right. Thanks, man. We're going to have one more bonus episode next week, and then we'll be starting with season three on March 5th.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.